Good morning. We're trying to go live on Instagram too, so hopefully we can figure this out. Maybe. Yeah. Maybe not. It does not look like it's doing anything.
You probably have to put the custom one in.
Maybe. Oh, well. Guess not today, friends.
Oh, there it goes. Is.
There it goes. I thought that we had been going live on Instagram every week, but I was wrong.
Apparently not.
Totally wrong. So, good morning. I would want to wait until a few people log in until we give some updates for this month. And then once we get a couple of people on there, we can kind of get that going.
Yeah.
We are going to talk today about coffee quality tools and kind of what we do to test our coffee from beginning to end.
Yeah, and we're not going to get in too depth, obviously, because we have our trademark process and can't go in too depth, but I'm going to show you some of the equipment that I use to test your guys' coffee every day. Some of it may be stuff you've seen before, but I'm sure some of it isn't.
Yeah, I mean, the very first thing that happens, right, is our bean truck comes in. So we've selected the grades of coffee that we expect from the company and what we want in the lots. Good morning, Deborah.
Good morning.
Of coffee that we want. And so when it arrives, the first test is almost a smell test and a visual test.
Yeah. So sometimes like the trucks can leak water or bad things can happen. So we hand unload every single green bag of coffee and put it on a pallet. That way we can look at it, make sure it's what we expect. And then the lot numbers are what we expect. So.
Yeah, and if it smells musty or moldy or whatever, it's refused right away.
Yeah.
You can smell that immediately.
Yeah, and sometimes, you know, sometimes things happen, bags get wet, and we have to refuse those as well, obviously.
So that's kind of the first step is coming to the building, smell and visual. And then the second thing that we do is weigh everything, make sure that we're getting
the amount of coffee we paid for.
Exactly. Deleting spam comments. I don't know if you guys can see those or not.
No, that was on Twitch.
Okay, all of the platforms kind of feed into one comment stream, so we don't.
Oh, yeah, you could, if you put the overlay on, it would show the chat.
Yeah, but then it's like, right?
No,
it looks weird. Let's see. Oh, yeah, no, we don't like that. We don't like that. So we've got the coffee in the building. We've smelled it. We made sure it's okay. We kind of did a quick visual and a weight to make sure that it's what we ordered, what we asked for. The bags are all printed with like lot numbers and certifications and stuff like that so that we can double check those.
Yep, and it's all traceable back to the origin, which is a big thing. You want to make sure that you're getting the lots that you're actually paying for instead of something random
or inferior.
Yeah.
You know, that we didn't expect. So then after we do that, what do you do?
So the first thing that I do is for all new lots, moisture content is probably the most important thing for the flavor of coffee. So the farms actually dry it there down to a certain percentage. And when it's transferred over to America, it's stored in a warehouse that is climate controlled to keep the coffee at that certain moisture content. So the first thing I test when we get new lots and new bags in is I take a sample from each bag using this tool.
Okay, so why is it so pokey?
So if anyone's seen a coffee bag,
Bill,
we've had incorrect lots come in before.
And sometimes it's just like they tried to substitute or somebody grabbed the wrong bag or... it was an accident, or sometimes it's on purpose and they're trying to get one over on us and think that we won't notice.
Most of the time, so like these warehouses, there's only a couple warehouses that store coffee because they're very specific.
Yeah.
So every coffee company kind of gets coffee from these warehouses and, you know, things happen. Like it's people working there. So sometimes they'll just grab the wrong pallet of coffee or... You know, things happen.
They grabbed a Honduran coffee, but it might not be our Honduran coffee.
Yep. Yeah.
And it might be not according to our contract that we have.
Yep.
But we've worked with our coffee procurer for
a long
time. 40 years, probably.
Yeah, a really long time.
A really long time. So they're pretty good. They know what we're expecting. They know what we like, which really helps. It helps to have a good relationship.
Yeah, it makes it a lot easier on us when we need to buy lots and do other things.
Okay, so this pokey tool, it's sharp at this end.
Yeah, so if you guys...
And it's open at this end.
If you guys have ever seen a burlap bag, it's kind of like strings of yarn all intertwined. So this is pokey because it's designed to go in between the threads, and then it expands it open. So I can actually dump the coffee out of that hollow end.
And then there's so that it doesn't ruin the bag.
Yeah, there's a V-groove, so it kind of like, it looks horrible when you're doing it because you got to sit there and shake it back and forth. But the coffee will go out, and then I can collect samples of the coffee. And then I will take those samples. So we have a vacuum oven. And basically what we do is I weigh the coffee in these little silver tins right here. This is an analytical balance. It goes down to 0.0001 of a gram. So I'll take all the weights of the coffee and then put them in the vacuum oven for a specific amount of time and then measure the weight after we get all the water out of the beans, and that'll calculate out to a moisture percentage. So every lot that comes in, we're checking to make sure the moisture is in the range it needs to be, because otherwise the quality of the coffee is drastically worse.
If you guys ever spy in our subscription photos and stuff, sometimes Ashley and I use these for photos because they're like the perfect little dish for pictures. I'm sure you guys have spied them in some of them before. Now, these all have like numbers and stuff written on them. Is that just, does whatever you put in here need to match those numbers?
No. So it's just for tracking. So like I need to measure the cup before the coffee goes in. So to make it easier, I have them numbered, and that way I can trace it. And then the weight of the actual cup.
That makes sense. Because, yeah, they're all like just a little bit different.
Yeah, yeah. They seem all the same, but they're definitely not when you're measuring into that specific of, you know, a weight.
Yeah. And then we have like we call it an ERP, but where we record all this information so that we can go back and look at the lot numbers and all of these tests and make sure that it's, you know, what we expected. So if somebody says, hey, this was tasted old or something, we can be like, you know, it wasn't, or it, yeah. You know, we can figure out what happens, because sometimes things happen in the roaster too, you know.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, that's why we put date codes on everything too. And if you guys do have an issue, I'm sure we've asked you for a date code, and that helps us trace it back through the entire process to figure out what happened.
Yeah. Yep. Did somebody fall asleep at the roaster? Hopefully not.
Yeah.
Or, you know, did a little fire start? Maybe.
Yeah. So then basically we'll do sample roasting. Normally we do it before we get the coffee and after sometimes.
So sample roasting happens on a tiny roaster, right? Yeah. Like how much coffee are you sample roasting?
So it's like 400 grams at a time. Maybe. So we're talking about getting something so we can stream portably, and maybe that would be something interesting to show you guys, is actually roasting on the sample roaster. Probably be easier than a big roaster.
Yeah, the sample roaster is very small. 400 grams makes what?
It's less than a pound, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we do that, and then we actually log the roast and graph it in a certain way so that we can transfer it to our other roasters and make sure it's really close to the same every time.
Yeah, because sometimes we want them to heat really fast and then slow roast, or slow roast the whole time, or we just, depending on the moisture content, the variety of coffee, the source of the coffee, what notes we're trying to bring out requires kind of a different bake, if you will.
Yep, and even like just the moisture content going from like 11% to 9% can change how you roast it, so...
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, when you get your baking instructions, it says if you're at a high altitude, you need to do this. If you're at a low altitude, but with a lot more factors involved.
Yep.
It's pretty cool. What's this black machine?
So this is kind of the most critical piece right here of our roasting process. This one is called the Javalytics. The older machines are called Agtrons. Those are super expensive. We used to have one. Now we have new technology, so they're a lot cheaper, and they're these units. We have a couple of these, and then every single batch of coffee will get ran through one of these machines. It has a little drawer that you can open with a little tray, and it actually measures the color of the coffee, whole bean or ground.
That's so funny. I've never seen this one. So they used to be in like these like Petri dishes.
Yeah.
And you would have to put the Petri dish in there.
Yeah, basically it has a built-in Petri dish. So we take color measurements of every single roast. Those get logged also. That's just, if you think of it like a steak, it's a good way to think about it. Like there's a color on the outside and inside, and we have certain requirements for what that is.
Yeah, you want to make sure it's, you know, medium rare every time, or, yep. you know, depending on what you're going for. So this was the machine that, did we talk about this one?
Yeah, this is the, this just that goes in line with the vacuum oven. And this is what, like, I really need precise measurements for the water calculation, and this is a very expensive scale that gives me that.
So this is the moisture thing.
Yep.
So you put the little dish in there.
Yeah, it's just to weigh it.
And like visualizations. And then it's got this cool glass case. You can open it top or bottom.
Yeah, because even just like breathing on it will affect the weight more than you would think because it's so accurate.
That's crazy. Logan does all of this quality control. We have built like a whole quality control room in the office. It used to get done out on the production floor, and with the technology getting so advanced, just the machines and the being in a non-temperature controlled warehouse was messing up some of the readings and stuff. So we brought it up into a temperature controlled area. It's got its own like private room where Logan can go and test everything.
Yeah, I mean, we've kind of expanded the way we do things a little bit too. Like they have fancier machines that like automatically tell you the moisture and all this other stuff, but I don't really trust it as much as I trust the scale in a vacuum oven to make sure that it's right every time.
So how did you learn how to do this and how to test coffee?
From a coffee roaster who anyone in the industry kind of knows. He's out of Vermont, and I went and trained with him for a couple weeks and kind of just been learning about this stuff since I was young, because I was interested in it. But there's a couple good books out there, too, that you can buy and read, like by Scott Rao and other people. So,
and there's definitely, I would say, science behind this, but there's also a lot of art. So it can be, you know, opinions can vary widely from person to person, from company to company. What somebody thinks is correct, another company might say, no, we don't do it like that. And that's okay. There is a lot of different ways to measure this. We obviously need this to be highly replicatable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we want our roast to taste as close to each other as possible from, you know, year to year and batch to batch. So we might do it a little bit different than somebody that only does tiny little limited time roasts.
Yep. And like a lot of people are switching over to automatic roasting and like doing a lot of other things. We still stick with manual roasting, but I'm kind of adding in the science also so that we can repeat everything that we do. And like, it's exactly the way I want it every time, which is really important. And just by looking at it, you can kind of tell, but you don't really understand the full story.
Yeah. So in the roaster, there's something that's kind of like this. It's like a handle with a little scoop on it that's in the roaster. And with our old roaster, you would put the handle in, you'd pull it out, and you could look at the coffee, and it was all done basically visually to when the roasts were done. And now we have, for the last few years, I would say, we have a laptop out by the roaster. And so there's like a chart, and you can actually like watch the progress of the roast in addition to pulling it out and visually testing it. It's pretty cool to watch Kevin or Logan on the small roaster, they're really focused on not only the color, but what's actually happening inside of the roaster.
Yeah. And I mean, it tracks everything. It tracks like the amount of air going through the roaster, the temperature at like multiple different spots, like the humidity. It tracks a bunch of different things so that we know, like, depending on what's happening with the weather, we have to roast a little different.
Yeah. And some days we'll be like, oh, it's too hot and humid. We can't do this today, or we can't run this machine today because the coffee doesn't like it, or, you know, things like that. Well, we get a bean truck every week. So that testing's done, you know, that day immediately, basically, do we need to refuse it or not?
Yep.
And then how long does the roast take?
I mean, we roast a 450-pound batch every 15 minutes for, like, our bulk stuff. A lot of the stuff on the website, though, is roasted on our small roaster, which is 28 pounds at a time. And that takes 13 to 16 minutes, depending on the roast.
Yeah.
The measuring the color is really quick. That only takes a couple seconds, but that's a critical part. And then I can't get in too much about the moisture content stuff, about how long that takes and our process for that. But it takes a long time to do that and do it correctly. And you're doing a large sample size, so it's a lot of effort to make sure that it's right.
So really, all of our, like, single origins and anything like that on coffeebeanery.com is roasted on the 28-kilo roaster, right?
12-kilo.
12-kilo roaster.
Yep.
And that is only done by you or Kevin, right? Nobody else is really allowed to roast that coffee. Yep. It's, you know, it's got to be very precise. We want that coffee to taste perfect. Now, we're in about 5,000 convenience stores and offices and stuff like that. So that coffee is often roasted on the bigger roaster. The base coffee for the flavored coffee is roasted on the big roaster.
Yep.
And that takes a lot of science as well. We're just able to do it on a bigger scale because we go through so much of that. But we don't want our single origin sitting on our shelf for very long at all.
Yeah, so that's... They hate me for it, but one of my goals has been to limit the amount of time that coffee is on the shelf. Just roast small batches more often, which drives them crazy because they would like to have everything available at any moment all the time, and I try my best.
Yeah, but that does get a little difficult. But and then on the other side, if somebody contacts us and they're like, this flavor tasted weird, 9 times out of 10, that whole batch is already gone. So if we can, we'll go test it, but we either have to get it back or just kind of take their word for it, because it's gone so quick.
Yeah, and we've kind of changed in the last little bit here. We're tasting all of the flavored batches immediately right away, so we should catch a lot more of those problems.
Yeah, it doesn't happen that often, but here and there, you know, some like in the flavoring, the way we flavor, maybe too much flavor got stuck to the side of it, or maybe a couple bad beans ended up in the batch, you know, or the roast was off. It doesn't happen often, but it does happen. So we've started tasting all of the flavored coffees. We have like little cups out there, and Melissa is awesome. She brews them and we have them all sitting out. And then anybody who runs by kind of tastes it and leaves a note on the table about what they thought. Obviously, if there's a problem, we go pull it right away.
Yeah.
But most of the time, it's like, yep, good, smiley face, you know, on to the next, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
So we test before roasting. We test colors after roasting. Mm-hmm. We sample it after roasting and flavoring.
Yeah. We cup it after roasting as well in the big batches. We cup it to make sure it tastes right. A lot of times you can tell by the color. When I go back and look at the graph that was created, I know, you know, if it's good or not. And then anything that's outside of those parameters, we'll cup and see how it tastes and then pull it if it's not good
so
enough.
So cupping is going to be a little bit different than tasting. So we are kind of talking about two different things. So with our flavored coffee, we are just brewing it in a normal machine. We're grinding it right away, brewing it in a normal machine.
Yep.
Cupping is going to be different. So it's a whole process.
Yeah.
So cupping, you're going to put how many grams of coffee in here?
So for these cups, I do 10 grams of coffee. And then I think it's like 170 milliliters of water.
Yeah.
And then we'll let it sit for a certain amount of time.
And it's going to build basically like a crust.
Yeah.
On the top.
That would actually be an interesting video. If we
should
get the
do that for
we
you
could
guys.
Do a live cupping. Maybe some of the people who are on every day too, we can have
Send some coffee. It's kind of the process of how we do it. So it's going to build like this crust. So think about if you did a French press, but then you left all the grounds in your cup.
Pretty much. And so then we'll break the crust and we'll smell it and get the aroma. This is also how we score coffee.
And you do at least three of every kind.
Yep.
You have to do at least three of every kind. And the importance of that is if there was a defective bean, it should have only been in one cup.
Yeah.
So if you're testing three, you can make sure and see what happens. So we'll have three. You'll break the crust with, you have like two spoons and you kind of take them and you know, move the crust out of the way. And then, the first thing you're going to do is you're going to smell it and make sure it smells how it should, kind of, get the notes that you think are in it, which again is highly subjective.
Yeah, it is.
From person to person. And then you take a spoon and you dip it in the side kind of without grounds. Yeah.
Well, you pull all the grounds out. Yeah. So then you'll take the spoon and fill it with coffee and then you have to slurp it up and like aerate it. So you slurp really hard and let it coat your whole mouth.
Yeah. Like when you've heard people like drink wine and they like slurp it so that you can get it on each part of your mouth. So you can get all the different tastes.
Yep. And then, the really important thing is you're tasting it hot and cold.
Yes.
Because if you've never tried this with your own coffee, like drink it when it's super hot and fresh. And then if you wait like 30 minutes and drink it cold, it will taste completely different.
Even in the like medium, not like super hot and not super cold.
Yep.
When we drink flavored coffee, a lot of times it's super hot coming out of the pot. But if you wait a few minutes or add a little bit of cream even to cool it down, the flavor, you're going to taste so much more flavor because at first it's just really hot.
Yeah. And the taste kind of changes. This is more towards like single origin, not flavored coffee. But
it's pretty equal in both.
Yeah. The flavor changes dramatically over the amount of time it cools down.
Yeah.
Which is super interesting.
Yeah, it is really. It's interesting. And then as you do this more and more, you'll start to be able to pick out notes and you'll be like, oh, that was really fruit forward. So when we say that, it's almost like it's hitting fruit notes on the front of your tongue, like right away.
Yeah.
And then you'll start to be like, oh, but did you taste those notes at the back of it? And that's more like
The body.
Yeah.
So
the,
it's
like
second
acid taste.
And body. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's weird because you can feel it on your tongue. At least a lot of people, it's easier to tell if something is bitter or acidic based on where it hits on your tongue. Like the front will be acid and like astringent and the back is more bitter and more body.
Yeah. And the more you do it, the more you learn. And I'm not very good at it. I mean, I don't know that there's really good or bad. It's just like when you taste something and I'll try to explain it and Logan will be like, oh, that's this. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. And so then the next time I taste it, I know what I'm looking for or what the name of that is, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, it's hard to like associate flavors and tastes and feelings to names when like you've never done it. You're coming out of nowhere. At least for a lot of people it is. Some people are really good at it.
Yeah. The sommeliers, right?
Yeah.
That's what they're called. And don't they have more taste buds than everybody?
Yeah, those super tasters. Yeah.
Yeah. So and if you smoke or do other things that can really affect your taste buds. I think even some medicines can really affect your taste buds. So sometimes you can't always, get all of those notes. But so that's just roasting the coffee.
Yep.
So then the next part of this is a lot of you have to grind your coffee. I mean, you have to grind it in some way, shape, or form. You can't drink whole bean coffee. You could try, but it'd be pretty gross. So these are ancient, and this is a display set, but they were really used at one point.
Yep. So these are sieve shakers. Now we have like an automated machine with a lot more screen sizes.
Yeah, I wish I could like show you the different sizes. But they're all different sizes. So I'm sure you guys have seen these in some, part of your life. There's like coffee grounds still stuck in them.
Yep. So what these do is we, for all of our grinders, we calibrate them all the time. It's really important that they're grinding to the right consistency that we want. So what we do is we grind the coffee, and then we'll put them through a set of sieve shakers and make sure that the number that's coming out is what we want, that there's not too many fines and not too many coarse.
And these are like grounds set in a standard size.
Yep.
So this is, you know, kind of what we expect in the coffee community.
Yep.
This would be the standard size for each different grind. So yeah, as we calibrate our grinders, so we calibrate our own grinders.
Yep, I do that. I actually fix all of the machines here.
Yeah.
He's
very mechanically minded.
I do all of the calibration myself on a certain schedule. The only thing we can't do ourselves is the scales.
Yep, we have a company come in and calibrate scales, but grinders we can do on our own, and mm-hmm. that's partly because you have these sieves, right?
Sieve shakers.
Sieve yeah. shakers. So if you need an auto drip grind, it should stay in this one, yep. right?
It's That's all coarse. Based on percentages. Fine. So, you know, you want like 70% in a number 30 or whatever the numbers are.
Yeah. And then we only use burr grinders, right?
Yep. yep. Well, so our big grinder is a roller style grinder, which is more industrial. That's for like the gas station type stuff.
Convenience stores.
All of the stuff that you guys buy, like in our 12-ounce coffee, is all from like super high end burr grinders.
Yeah. And that just, it grinds your coffee more evenly. Mm-hmm. If you've ever used a blade grinder or a food processor, you get very uneven cuts.
Yep. Yeah, because it doesn't really cut it. It just kind of smashes it around and smashes it up. Our grinders actually have little blades and it shears the bean. So it doesn't heat up and then it's really consistent.
Yeah. And we do have like a set calibration schedule where these are calibrated every so often during mm-hmm. Christmas time when they're getting used more, they're calibrated more. However, most of our machine operators, the girls grinding out at the web desk for e-commerce orders, when you go to grind a bag, you can tell immediately
if
there's something wrong. You're so used to seeing a certain texture that you're like, this just doesn't look right. Yep. And so then we go grab Logan, and it takes, what, maybe 15 minutes to calibrate the small grinders, if that. It's not,
yeah,
it's not
doesn't
that
take
difficult.
Very long. It's weird because of the flavoring and stuff we use, our grinders, they're used in a way that most aren't, so it takes a little bit more to get them dialed in and keep them really good.
Well, and some of the like oil and stuff can kind of get in there, especially if we ground it too soon after.
That's a lid.
Is it the top?
I threw it underneath.
I was trying to figure out what was going on here. So we have a bunch of sets of these, and then we actually have acrylic like sleeves kind of that have a lid. And oh gosh, they've got to be from the 70s or 80s. And they even have example grinds in mm-hmm. them so that we know we can always match it to even what it was.
Yeah, they used to do a lot of things visually back in the 70s and 80s.
And, yeah.
And now we have some more standards and
that's true.
Practices
but
that are in place.
Some of it is still an art and a lot of it mm-hmm. is, you know, hand done. There's a machine might be able to do it, but that's yeah. also expensive and replaces a person. So
yeah, and we try and do things like in a more manual fashion so someone's paying attention. It's yes. really easy to automate things and not pay as much attention.
Yeah.
And I don't like that. I would rather have someone paying attention to it all the time.
So this is the sieves for the ground coffee. Now these are sieves for whole bean, right?
Yeah, so these are called screens. These are mostly used at Origin. So every coffee we buy has a certain screen size.
So that's when they're sorting it at the farm.
Correct, that it needs to be. We don't really double check that because we don't have to.
You can visually tell by the beans. When you pull the beans out of the canvas bag in the beginning and put them here, you can visually very quickly tell if it's right or not.
Yeah, and I mean, there's also so many, like our importer and everything,
they check
that. The warehouse is, you know, if there's something wrong, we have screens here to double check it. But the quality of coffee we buy is usually a bigger bean, and it's super easy to tell whether it's the right screen size or not.
Yeah. Yeah, our beans look very pretty. Some of the cheaper beans can look very, like, dry and cracked and have
different color
deformities.
Yeah.
Just they look odd. So it is you can very quickly tell the quality of coffee just from holding it.
Yeah, and I mean, I'll take a 100-gram sample of the green coffee too when I go to take the moisture, and you pick out how many bad beans or defects or anything are in there, and there's a certain number that if there's too many, which for us, because we buy specialty grade, is only like if there's anything in it, then it usually goes back.
Well, so. We buy specialty grade, but we buy the top tier specialty grade right. as well. Like yep. less than 3% of the coffee in the world is this grade of coffee mm-hmm. Because it's really important to us. So that's one thing that we have never compromised on. And it's handpicked. A lot of it's hand sorted.
Yeah.
And humans make mistakes, right? So every once in a while there's like a defect or something, but it's pretty rare.
Yeah. I mean, we've gotten some bags that were bad, but, you know, that's why we pay attention because we can return those and get the correct stuff in.
Yeah, we even had a truck come in and he had smoked or something in the truck. Or he had a load of something.
Yeah, he had a load of, it smelled like vinegar or something.
Something.
Yeah.
And coffee is extremely porous.
Yep.
So if there's kind of like in your freezer or something, if it sucks in any of that, it's going to hold that in the coffee. And that's disgusting. So we had to refuse that whole truckload of coffee. We, you know, we're really big on no perfumes, no scents, no, like we... that we're very careful with cleaners that are used in the building because we just don't want the coffee to soak up any of those smells or chemicals yep. or anything. We had glass installed in our office and it didn't get etched right or something. So they wanted to go and put a chemical on it here. And we're like, no, you've got to take yeah. that back to you. We cannot have that in this building.
Yeah.
Yep. So we're very careful about that. And then, so once it's ground and packaged, Everything in the warehouse is done by people.
Yeah.
You know, it's hand done. So a lot of the labeling, all the grinding to get to your door, shipping. So, of course, we're humans and we make mistakes, but we really try our best to double check each other and, you know, ship it to you in the best condition possible. We can't always control the mail people.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is a bummer. And then... our coffee out like on after it's roasted, gosh, nothing's there probably more than 3-4 months at this point. You've cut the batches down so far.
Yeah, we used to have some coffee that would sit for, you know, 8 or 9 months.
But and like now, Michigan cherry ice where we're making every week.
Yeah.
It's some of the decafs linger a little bit, but yep. nothing concerning. We have a one-way valve in our bag. So was it carbon monoxide? No, carbon dioxide. Carbon yeah. dioxide can release from the bag, but no air, no gases can get into our bags at all.
Yeah, and the carbon dioxide is actually a really good thing for the coffee. So sometimes if you get bags that are a little bigger or anything like that, that's actually carbon dioxide that's kicked out or eaten all of the oxygen in the bag.
Yeah.
So that's actually a really good thing for coffee to see it when the bags are puffed up. That's actually a really
good thing. It means that we packaged it really quick, but sometimes they do explode, so we try not to do it quite that quick.
Yep.
Between roasting and packaging, they're in these like big bags and they do have to degas for a little bit or the mm-hmm. bags just explode. They release so much gas out of those bags.
Yeah, it's crazy. They have to sit for 1 or 2 days after they're ground. Otherwise, the packaging can blow up.
It just explodes. Yeah. Even with the valves, they explode. So you guys may have seen some of the really puffy bags lately, and that's because we changed the valve
mm-hmm.
On the front. It's no longer applicated at our machine. We have to send the film off to a company to have it put on. And it's a better valve, but we're all kind of still working out the kinks.
Yeah, it's a new technology also. We used to use like a button valve that had like a type of oil in it to keep it sealed. These use a different technology and they're kind of a new company. So we're working through some kinks with them to make sure that it works with the way we're packaging coffee. It's a really good valve and it'll keep coffee fresh for as long as it's in there pretty much. But
yeah, and that's the 12-ounce bag. The samplers don't have a belly button at all. Mm-hmm. So they're... we've opened samplers up, what, after 12, 13 years and brewed them, and they're still pretty good. We don't keep them that long.
Yeah.
But we found some in a drawer and we're like, I wonder. It was pretty interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, it definitely goes bad, but it takes like 3 or 4 years before you'll notice like a huge flavor difference with the type of packaging and valves we're using.
So. Yeah. And so that's just the quality control that we do here at, you know, our office. And then we have stores all over the world. So we're sending the coffee that, you know, the farm has taken so much care to get to us. And then we've taken so much care to get to our stores. And then they have a bunch of quality procedures to brew the coffee at the store. Our K-Cup machine also has some cool quality control features. What does it do? It like squeezes or presses on them. And if it's not sealed, it like kicks it out of the machine.
Yep. So, yeah, if it senses that it squeezes it and the top of the lid doesn't pop up a certain amount, then it'll just reject it.
Yeah. Some of those rejections can be a little bit messy, especially if the lid wasn't sealed on. It just like opens and goes all over the place. Kim's always cleaning out the bottom of that machine.
Yeah. But hopefully I haven't heard as many issues since we started using the new one.
And it allowed us to use a filter that's more built in so that the grinds don't get through nearly as bad as they used to on that old machine was. Whew.
Yeah.
But it's cool because we have the new machine, we are able to offer some new things this year. I do have a question every now and then.
Yeah, it definitely happens.
So usually when that happens, the pressure in the cup has built up too much. Like you can see if that lid's puffed up pretty good. What I do is I poke it down, I open it, and then I put it down again, and it will release that pressure because that pressure will push the grounds usually up through the lid and around the cup and down into your mug. So, I mean, you could even do it every time, just poke the little hole, put it up, and then do it again. And then it'll brew better.
It's also like K-Cup machines are pretty finicky too. Like if the nozzle's not cleared out, you know, they can get a little jam and then they'll create too much pressure. They're just finicky machines, but.
Yeah, you're supposed to clean that needle pretty often.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we were surprised by just how often you're supposed to clean that needle.
Yeah, I don't remember the last time we looked it up.
But. Yeah. Clean your machines, check the needle, and then sometimes you just need to release that pressure in the cup. It's from that degassing. It's usually just the coffee was too fresh when it got put in the pod.
Yeah.
And by fresh, I mean like it was put in 12 hours before it should have been. You know what I mean? It can be that little of a difference.
It just needed to degas a little bit more.
Yeah, so that can happen.
So we have a quality check now to where it checks the filter to make sure it's sealed properly. Yes. I know.
That can also happen. Yeah. Cause the filters are like, it's not glue. It's like
it's welded.
Yeah. But to plastics, that sounds weird, to the inside of the plastic cup. So if something happened in manufacturing, that filter can slip down and then the grounds will just go out the hole in the bottom as well.
Yep, it does happen. We bought some higher quality cups, like, I don't know, three or 4 months ago.
To have a deeper filter basket, so we were able to put more coffee.
So I feel a lot more confident in those. I know we didn't save a ton of money by switching to them, but I wanted a better cup anyways, because I know we had some issues in the past with stuff like that.
Well, I think it's shocking how hard it was to actually find cups in the United States.
Yeah.
It's shockingly hard to the point where we had to order a truckload.
Yeah. I mean, you can find them. It's just the quality of them isn't always the best. And then the price of them is like very expensive to not have the highest quality cups.
Yeah. So we have a newer filter in the cup, which is great. And that leads me into, we are going to be adding more K-Cups. If there's a flavor on the shelf not already in K-Cups, it will be soon. We're going to be adding a couple more unflavored coffees, specifically Costa Ricans. We're going to add a whole line of Costa Ricans, and all of those Costa Rican coffees will benefit the, I don't want to call it a daycare because it's so much more than that, but the like children's center at the La Manita Farm And they do really cool stuff there. I mean, they literally, they feed them, they bathe them, they wash their clothes, they educate them. They provide medical care, not just for kids, but for the workers, for their parents, for the grandparents. They really take care of the community. So we want to get, as a company, a lot more invested in this farm. And that also comes with adding more coffees that they have to our lineup, which is awesome because they're really good.
Yeah.
A couple things that we've been talking about. We think we might order some mushroom powder and try our hand at some mushroom coffee and some vitamin coffee.
I don't know anything about this.
Yeah. We're thinking we might explore it. It's pretty popular. So maybe we can find some version that we really like that we can add to our coffee. Or maybe that's been the problem with the ones that we have, is we didn't like the base coffee, so we didn't like the mushroom coffee.
Yeah, because I remember the one you had was not good.
No, it wasn't. So we're going to start playing with some of that stuff. New mug. We have a navy mug. It's probably hard to see that it's navy. But it's really cute.
It's dark.
Yeah. It's a dark navy. It's beautiful. So there's a new mug online. March Madness voting round 2 is going on right now. After round 1, we had 10 people who are tied. So Jared and Amy and a Jessica are the top 3, but there's 10 ties right now.
I'm so bad at that. I always forget I have to pick what I think everyone else will pick. I always pick what I think is the best.
That's what I do,
not
too.
Not what everyone thinks is the best.
I pick what I like. I'm going to say there's been a couple. Quick. We did like a seeded bracket. So we took last year's winners and kind of matched them up that way instead of just alphabetical order. And I'm going to say I think there's already kind of some upsets. And I can see where this round of voting is going, and I think there's going to be further upsets this time.
I don't have access to that.
But whoever wins, if there's ties, we'll send all the top people prizes. Right now there's 10. There's 10 tied for the first place, so that's pretty cool. If you've been with us for a while, you know a little bit of something about the Lucky Sale. Because St. Patrick's Day is on Sunday, the Lucky Sale will be on Monday. We didn't want to do a crazy sale on the weekend and then have nobody here to help you.
Especially that one.
Yeah. So the Lucky Sale will be on Monday the 18th, and we will send out warnings and reminders, all that good stuff. It's a crazy sale. So that's the one where it's like the race. There's so many 40% offs. There's so many 30% offs. If you're on our VIP Facebook page, you'll get the codes early. They won't work early, but at least you'll have the code and you can have your cart loaded. We don't clear carts beforehand. So you can kind of have everything ready to go. Make sure your addresses are correct, that the code's in there.
Yeah.
No edits, no changes, no cancels. We won't answer the phone. If there's something wrong globally, we fix it, obviously. But that's coming Monday. Super exciting.
We normally stream that, too?
We do normally go live with everybody just for a little bit to make sure the world didn't fall apart. So we'll probably do that again.
Show a little heat map and stuff.
In our St. Patrick's Day gear. It's always fun. So if you have any... anything you want to see us explore this year, we're looking forward to it. Drop us your suggestions and let us know what you guys want to see. I think we need to get better. I know we keep saying this. We need to get a list of testers together because we've got a lot of things to test this year. So I'm going to put that on Patty's list.
Yeah, it'd be funny, too, because of the studio we could use, we could maybe even have some people on, like when we send them stuff to Cup. We could even invite them on to the live stream with us to test
with,
it. Yeah,
with Restream, we could do that. We can invite guests.
I have no idea if any of you would want to do that, but that would be super fun.
Like a laptop or a webcam or whatever, we could invite you to our live and we could all taste coffee together.
Yeah.
That'd be really
definitely
fun.
Definitely possible.
And I did make Mom and Patty stop watching the boys live before you said what you were going to do. I already knew, so I finished it. But so they haven't seen it, just so you know. They're still in the dark.
Yeah, I still have to figure out a way to make that happen. I don't want to buy a fryer, but I need access to one.
Yeah, we have one. I hate using it in my house because it stinks. But if we changed out the oil before and after, we could probably do that.
Yeah, because I've heard peanut oil is good too.
Can you just do it in a pan?
No.
No?
No.
It'd be too messy.
It has to be like fully surrounded
in a
basket. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll figure that out.
Yeah. But also, I hope Mom and Patty just didn't watch that.
They might have. Probably not. Patty's on vacation and Mom's at a meeting. So she was very worried about the live. She's like, what are you going to do? I'm like, we'll figure it out. Logan's coming with me. He knows all this science.
Yeah. And I mean, it's obviously a lot more in depth. If you want, I can answer like more in depth questions. Yeah. But I don't want to try and have too much.
Or if there's something that you're still really curious about the process, we can try to, you know, figure out a way to either do a remote live out in the warehouse or...
Yeah, we can make videos
bring
about
it
stuff.
In here.
Or, yeah, we're trying to figure out ways to make it so that you can see more
it's of a cool
just
process.
This room.
Or if you're ever in Flushing, Michigan, stop by, say hi, and take a tour.
Yeah.
We're here Monday through Friday from 9 to 5.
Yep.
But all right. You guys have a wonderful week, and we will see you Monday.
Bye. All right.